Hello, this is Lafayette Faust, creator of the Nevermore Hollows podcast. Thank you for making the show a success. Please take a moment to subscribe, give 5 stars, comment, and share the show with your friends. It's the best way to help us grow and to be able to continue to provide quality horror content. Also, please support our new art director, Chris Madman Goins at Black Sheep Studios TN on Instagram. He has some amazing Nevermore Hollows art for sale, signed by the both of us, as well as many other original pieces I think you're gonna love. Now, for you horror hounds who like to have a good laugh, I invite you to check out my other podcast. It's called The Three Uncool Cats. In it, my two friends and I sit in a basement and discuss music, movies, and whatever else comes into our warped minds. I would really appreciate it if you would give it a listen. Now, with that out of the way, I invite you to sit back, turn on a light, and prepare yourself. The Grim Tale of Grace Macabre, Chapter 9. Grace was in deep thought, reflecting on what Jim had said about the black-eyed children when her mother, Jennifer, walked up. She was beaming, and Grace said, "What's going on?" "The surgeon just spoke with the family. She said the operation was a success. They got the bullet and repaired the damage to Ian's lung, which was very minimal. He's in recovery now, but he's going to be okay, Grace." "That's wonderful news," replied Jim. "Since there's nothing more we can do, I say we head home." When they got into the car, Jennifer grabbed Grace by the hand and said, "Are you sure you're okay, honey? I was so terrified when I heard about the shooting at the school. I was afraid that you had been hurt. I couldn't live with myself if you'd been shot." "I'm okay, Mom." Jennifer's eyes welled up with tears as Jim drove them out of the hospital parking lot. "If I were to ever lose you or Zach." Grace squeezed her mother's hand. "It's okay, Mom. Ian is going to be okay. I'm okay. It's behind us." They ended up at Jim's colorfully painted Victorian house just after 6 p.m. Zach, Grace's 13-year-old brother, had opted not to go to the hospital and was waiting for them. He was crashed on the couch reading Mighty Snail, his favorite comic book, a story about a couple of superhero snails who were bent on saving the world. Jessica pushed his feet off the couch so Jennifer could sit. She then insisted they all stay the night and called in takeout from their favorite Chinese restaurant, the Happy Kaiju. Grace went upstairs to change. Her Misfits t-shirt was stained with Ian's blood. She slipped on a My Chemical Romance shirt and ran down to catch Jim as he walked to his car. Grace called to him. "Would it be okay if I went with you?" "Sure," Jim replied, knowing that she probably needed to stay busy while she continued to process the day's horrible events. He tossed her the keys. Grace was surprised. Jim still owned the very first car he had bought as a teenager. It was a 1968 Camaro, painted black with 2 silver stripes on the hood. It was one of his prized possessions. "You're really going to let me drive?" "Well, you've got your license, right?" "Well, yes, but I've only had them for a month, and you love this car." "I do," Jim admitted, "but what's the fun in having something this cool if you can't share it?" Grace beamed. While the Barbie zombies coveted their high-priced BMWs and their earth-friendly battery-powered cars, she had grown up with an appreciation of classic cars. Not because she was some tomboy who wanted to be a grease monkey, but because cars like Jim's Camaro came from a time when cars were built with an eye for individuality and character. Besides, she thought, a low-slung muscle car was just so rock and roll cool. Grace slid in behind the wheel and smiled at the way it felt in her hands. Combined with the way the leather bucket seat hugged her body, she felt a sense of comfort and power. This is going to be so great. Jim smiled as he slid into the passenger seat. Yeah, it will. Let's get some food. Grace turned the key and the engine growled. She pulled the shifter into drive and the car literally prowled down the driveway and onto the street. She felt a small surge of adrenaline course through her body and the shock of the day melted away. She pressed the accelerator and the car leaped forward, encouraging her to unleash the beast that it was designed to be. She knew better, though, because the car was too much for her to handle with her limited experience. She did, however, give the acceleration a small punch. The car pounced down the road, pushing her back into the seat. Jim laughed at the look on her face. Liberating, isn't it? Oh, yes, she said. This is awesome. Driving is one of the most liberating experiences in the world, Jim said. Especially when the car is one like this, Grace replied. They arrived at the Happy Kaiju too quickly, as far as Grace was concerned. They stepped into the restaurant and stood beside the checkout counter, waiting while the owner, Mr. Zhang, seated a young couple at a booth. Mr. Zhang returned and flashed a broad smile. He was a short, thin man with a thick head of jet-black hair. Ah, Mr. Jim, you have a call-in order, yes? That's correct, Jim replied. Mr. Zhang turned his attention to Grace, and his smiling face changed into one of concern. Were you at the school today, Miss Grace? That question, though it was innocent, brought the images from the day screaming back into the front of her mind. Grace nodded, saying nothing. I'm so glad that you're safe, Mr. Zhang said sincerely. I will be sure to say a prayer of thanks for you tonight. Grace was uncomfortable with someone saying they would pray for her. Thank you, she replied. I appreciate it. This town, Zhang said, shaking his head. So beautiful, so quaint, but such dark things happening all the time. You've heard about the missing children? I have, Jim replied. 4 kids abducted since the first week of October. Everyone's on edge. I hope they catch the guy before he strikes again, and I hope that the kids are found alive. Mr. Zhang sighed. It is truly a sign of the times we live in. Darkness everywhere. Especially in this town. Even the name, Nevermore Hollows, calls to mind such dark images, like in that story by Edgar Allan Poe. Jim paid for the food, and they stepped out onto the sidewalk and took in the beautiful fall evening. It was nearly twilight, with the setting sun lighting up the towering clouds with red and orange. As they approached the Camaro, they noticed 2 people walking around the car, admiring the craftsmanship. Grace's heart leaped in her chest when she realized it was Ari and Neffy. Jim noticed that she brightened. Friends of yours? Grace nodded. Hello, Jim said as they stopped next to the passenger side of the car. I'm Jim. He offered his hand. Ari shook it.
I'm Ari. Nice to meet you, said Jim. He turned to Neffy and extended his hand. She took it and gave it a lingering shake. Hello, she said, her voice silky and dark. I'm Neffy. She flashed Jim a glittering smile that Grace was sure could melt the resolve of the strongest men. My pleasure, Jim said, a curious look on his face. He turned back to Ari, who was running his hand appreciatively across the hood of the Camaro. Are you a gearhead? Jim asked. Ari gave a crooked smile that made Grace's heart flutter. Oh, yeah, he replied. I like cars, especially the old ones like this Camaro. What engine does it have, a 350 or a 396? A turbojet 396, Jim replied. Ari gave a sideways look at Jim. Really? That's a lot of muscle under the hood. Enough to make an ordinary daily drive a lot more exciting, Jim replied. I bet. How long you had it? Since I was 16, Jim replied. It's the first car I ever owned. Not much of a back seat, Neffy said. She leaned in through the passenger side window, which Jim had left down when they went inside the restaurant. Grace noticed that her stance was provocative, especially when she gave a serpentine wiggle of her backside. Her white, billowy blouse, reminiscent of a pirate's shirt, had slipped from her shoulder, seductively revealing her long, graceful neck and part of her upper back. It would be deliciously cozy for two people to sit back there, she said. Jim shot Grace a questioning look. She knew he thought that Neffy was being too provocative. Do you both go to school with Grace? Neffy straightened and turned to face Jim. She leaned back against the car and shook her long, dark hair out of her sparkling cat-green eyes. When she wasn't weaving a spell with her smile, her lips seemed to have a permanent, coy pout. Grace felt so inadequate in her presence. How could Ari ever like her when Neffy was the epitome of raw, seductive beauty? Yes, Neffy said. We've only recently met each other, though. Ari stepped around the car. We were coming here to eat when we saw the Camaro. We didn't realize that it belonged to you. He turned to Neffy. We've got to get going if we're going to meet the others on time. Neffy pushed herself away from the car with a sinuous elegance. She gave Jim a direct stare, flashed her mesmerizing smile, and said, It's been nice meeting you, Uncle Jim. Jim nodded, and looking at them both said, My pleasure. Neffy and Ari strode off toward the Happy Kaiju. Ari walked as if he feared nothing that this life could throw at him. Neffy walked with a seductive elegance that turned heads and melted hearts. After Jim and Grace were in the car, Jim asked, How do you know them? They're in a couple of my classes, she said. She could see that Jim didn't seem to like either of them. Why? Have you ever spoken to them about me? Grace shook her head. No. Why do you ask? Jim glanced out the window and watched as Ari and Neffy stepped inside the restaurant. He turned his gaze back to Grace. If you've never told them about me, then how did they know I was your uncle? The Grim Tale of Grace Macabre, Chapter 10. Grace sat at the table with her family, eating Kung Pao chicken and swapping stories. Jim was a writer, and Jessica was a lawyer, and both always had something interesting to share. Jessica was determined to use this night to bring order to a day of chaos. Jennifer received a text from Ian's dad. Ian was awake and alert. Though he was sore and heavily medicated, he was popping off lame jokes and asking where his Muppets lunchbox had gotten to. The reference to his stupid lunchbox made Grace smile. She took a bite of chicken and looked at Zach. "Your t-shirt says the Unpretties. Is that a band?" Zach was a few inches shorter than most 13-year-old boys and was thin. He had short, dark hair that he currently had shaped into a spiky mess with hair gel. He pushed his glasses up off the tip of his nose where they had slipped and said, "Yes, they're a local group." "I haven't heard of them," Grace said. Zach smiled in triumph. Grace had such cool taste in music and had always turned him on to new bands. He liked that he knew about a band that she had never heard of. "Man, do they rock," he said. "I met the guitar player last weekend when I hung out with Uncle Jim." Grace turned to Jim. "You know the guitar player in a rock band?" Jim raised a pair of chopsticks loaded with Mongolian beef to his mouth and shook his head. "I know the guitar player's dad, Derek Maines. Zach went along with me on some errands the other day and we saw Derek and his son." "Is the band any good?" Grace asked. "Oh, man, are they good?" Zach said. "They're awesome. They have a couple of self-produced videos online." Jim used a napkin to wipe his mouth. "They just got the band together a couple months ago." "Why do they only have two concert dates listed on the back of the shirt?" Grace asked. "They played their first two gigs a couple of weeks ago over in Atlanta," Zach said. "They thought it would be funny to list those two gigs as a world tour. Those guys are hilarious." In Zach's zeal to tout the Unpretties, he didn't realize he had a lo mein noodle hanging from his chin. Grace began to giggle. "What's so funny?" Zach asked. Just as she was about to tell him about the lo mein noodle hanging from his chin, her phone rang. Jessica had a strict rule about no cell phones at the dinner table, and Grace gave her an "I'm sorry" look. "Go ahead," Jessica said. "It may be important." Grace excused herself from the table, grabbed her phone, and looked at the number. She was surprised to see that it was Neffy's number. She stepped into the kitchen and said, "Hello? Grace, this is Neffy." "What's up?" Grace said, not sure exactly what else to say. "Have the police talked to you yet?" Yes, they did," Grace said, "earlier today at the school." "But not since then?" "No," Grace said, curious. "Why?" There was a pause. Then, "Justin Jones is dead." Grace was so shocked that she couldn't reply. "Are you still there?" Neffy asked. "Yes. I just don't know what to say. What happened?" "Suicide," Neffy said. "He killed himself at the juvenile detention center." "How? Don't they have precautions to stop these kinds of things from happening?" "I'm sure they do," Neffy said. "But Justin was being interviewed by a psychiatrist, and when the shrink laid down his pen, Justin grabbed it and stabbed himself in the heart before anyone could do anything." Grace shivered. "Well, that's horrible. But why would the police want to talk to me about that?" "Because they think you played a role in today's shooting," Neffy said. "What?" Grace replied, her mind reeling. "Why? Why would they think that?" "They found a diary at Justin's house," Neffy replied. "It was filled with entries about you. In the last entry, he states that he had to kill Brandon Decker to show you that he wasn't a wimp." "But that doesn't make any sense," Grace said. I've only talked to Justin a few times during class, and I never let him think I was interested. Besides, I thought he and Marcy were an item, especially the way she's always glared at me.
Look, Neffy said, I just found out and thought you should know. I'm trying to be your friend. I want you to be prepared when the cops show up.
Grace tried to make sense of all that was happening. The evening had been so good that she had allowed the horror of the day to fade. The progress she had made began to crumble around her.
I can't help it if Justin had a thing for me. That isn't enough to have them want to talk to me, is it?
Neffy paused before replying. After a moment, she said, Grace, he stated in the diary that you told him that killing Brandon would be proof of his love for you.